All right. First off, I have to apologize for any spontaneous napping I may do. No, I did not get diagnosed with narcolepsy, but I am trying to detox from coffee this week. It's funny, I'm not in the mind for milk. I don't want to, like, stop drinking coffee. I just wanted to kind of diminish or eliminate the addiction. You know, I couldn't stop cold turkey. I've been, you know, kind of going from 3 cups to 2 cups to 1 cup to 1/2 cup. I just had a gulp of coffee to try to not get headaches and to clean my body out so that then I can go back to drinking coffee. It's crazy. The headaches that I get from a caffeine, you know, if I don't get caffeine when my body needs it, are just like rough. And nothing will make them go away except for drinking coffee. And then, and even then there's this delay to it. So it's a real, it's not a good situation. And so that's actually what I want to talk about today was pain. I watched a video this morning actually by Zeph Frank, who does mostly these incredibly funny videos, but they're also raw, and he exposes a lot of himself, and in doing so really does a service to humanity. And so the one this morning he read was about, he started by reading an email that he had gotten a while back, and then a second email from the girlfriend of the person who read the first email, and it ended up being a talk about suicide. And so he talked about pain and emotional pain, and so it made me, you know, think a lot about, well, a lot of things. And it made me think about times in my life when I've really, I guess, lived with pain. Not so much physical pain. Well, I guess let me take that back. I'm actually living with physical pain right now. I've got a muscle spasm in my back that I've had for, I think this is now day 4. That I've been, you know, it doesn't seem to be getting any better. I'm now at the point where I need to start looking into some sort of professional help. Something occurred to me though, as I was struggling with this, Piratey said, "So have you been avoiding checking your stats?" And also this morning I was on the phone with Belicious, and as a phone rang, I picked it. I stood up to start talking to her, not remembering that I had just clicked refresh on my YouTube video. And so the intro music is quite noticeable. And so as I'm walking away, the intro music starts and she goes, "Oh, I know what you're watching." I was like, "Oh." So the answer is, have you been avoiding looking at your stats? Is no. And if you tuned in last week, I mean, it was all about letting go and realizing that this is not serving me. I'm getting too focused on the stats and the numbers and trying to make the TEDx talk, you know, or... And so I resolved to stop. And I guess I reduced my focus on it and I didn't put the effort and the energy into promoting it. I let go of that kind of feeling like, oh, I should be telling people about it all the time. But I still kept looking. And so I had this thought that, is this a psychosomatic, cosmic tap on the shoulder kind of thing? As I am continually clicking and I'm continually reaching to check on this thing that I said I wouldn't, and now my back has seized up as kind of a literal physical scolding of my actions. I don't know. In the last couple of years, things that I would have thought would be way too foofy and new agey, I now start to go, maybe so. Maybe, you know, as I started telling a story about broken fingers, the next day I dislocated my finger. As I'm not telling myself I'm not going to reach, and I do reach, my shoulder and back seizes up. I don't know. But really the pain that I wanted to talk about was more emotional pain. Occasionally I talk about this, but there was a 10-12 year period of my life where I took anxiety and depression medication every day to make life more enjoyable. And it worked for me. I was on a medication called Cerazone, and they stopped prescribing it because it started to do severe liver damage to a lot of people. I was not one of those people, and I got tested, you know, frequently. I would just go and say, okay, let's check for HIV, check my liver, swab me for worms, whatever you got. And so they always said I was fine. And so there was a time when I basically felt like I was just living in a state of anxiety and depression. And I can remember having deep bouts of depression. And what is really amazing to me is that for years, I tried to come off of the medication in the same way that I'm trying to come off of coffee. You know, so I first went down to taking, you know, a one pill one day and a half a pill the next day. One pill, half pill the next day. Because the way that medication works in a lot of those types of medications, it's not like you have a symptom and you take the pill and you feel it. It takes a number of days to build up a certain level in your bloodstream that then affects basically the way you think. You don't notice it. You just are thinking differently. It's kind of like if you've ever either been a woman who has her hormonal monthly experience or been close to someone who has a hormonal shift once a month that may be significant. It's not like that person goes, oh man, I'm starting to feel my period, you know, like emotions starting to come on. They just go, and then you go, maybe, you know, I'm just saying, possibly a month ago when you attacked me, we said that maybe this is caused by chemical things and it's not an actual, like, a big an issue as it feels like. I've never been in a situation like that, but I've read about them. But in those situations, when your chemistry is stirred up, it doesn't feel like, oh, I'm like under the drugs, you know, effect. It's just the world is different. And usually it's shittier. And usually I suck more. And usually you suck more. And so I used to go through this practice, and I had this huge epiphany when I finally was like, wait a minute. The world doesn't suck right now. It feels like the world sucks right now. And so I need to stop this process of going back and reformulating, recategorizing, reestablishing everything I know about the world to fit this new thought process that I'm having, this new way of feeling that I'm having, because that's actually not right. What's really accurate is the world is as awesome it's always been. I'm just now slipping into this chemically distorted filter and film that doesn't feel like a film. It just feels like real, but it's not. And that's one of the things that, like, you know, don't believe everything you think. It seems like such a simple sentence, but it's so huge. In the meditation, you talked about looking at a thought and being able to say, that's not real. That's just a thought. But for, you know, 20 years of my life, I very much had to battle with this being kind of at the whims of these thoughts because I hadn't yet really understood that your thoughts are not you. And you can choose to believe a thought. And very often a thought is not serving you and not bringing you to a good place. And so what was very encouraging for me is that, you know, after being on medication for, you know, 10 years, I did start to wean myself off. And eventually I got to a place where I was on like a quarter dose. And for the next 4 years, every time I tried to come off that quarter dose, I would have my period. I got to a point where I would recognize it and I would feel the funk come on. I would feel the way, okay, I just caught myself, you know. One of the tricks that I would learn is that if I started to use always never language, if I would say like, you never do this, or I go, I always forget to do this. I'm never gonna do this. I'm like, oh, that's my chemistry talking. That's me amplifying all the negatives, hazing over all the goods, and judging myself in this skewed sense. What I also learned during this many years of battling this, my mind, was that I learned for me, the worst thing I could do, or someone with good intentions could do for me, is to try to help me from a place of explaining to me or convincing me that I was being silly. Like, look, I'd be like, I suck at this. And they go, are you crazy? You're so good at this. Or everybody likes you. Or, you know, or whatever my skewed conclusion was. If somebody else wanted to help me by saying the opposite of that, instead of going, oh, you're right. You know what? You're right. I'm actually not so bad at that. I would instead go, okay, I'm smart. I'm going to think of all the arguments to prove you wrong. And so I would dig myself deeper and deeper and deeper into why things sucked, why I sucked, why I'm terrible, to prove to you that I was justified in my crummy attitude. So I learned over time that what I need to do is stop. Stop thinking, stop trying to fix it, stop trying to take it. Once I recognize, oh, I'm in a funk, then it's like, change my mindset, recognize I can't be trusted, try to watch a movie or something, try to stop steering because you're possessed. This is not right. And go into survival mode, not reevaluate the world, and try if the people around me know me well enough, just to let them know I'm off grid for a while. And like, it's not gonna help me, and it's not gonna help our relationship for us to try to get happy right now. I need to let this pass by not attaching to it. If I attach to it, it'll stick around. If I just let go of it, okay, this isn't real, but it fucking feels terrible. It's going to pass, though. And I've gone through it enough times, and I know it's going to pass. And that's one of the things that, like, the whole It Gets Better project, and, you know, the thing that I would try to say to someone if they're in that feeling of pain is, like, when I was 20, I didn't have enough experiences going through this to know it always passes. And then looking back, that was ridiculous, the conclusions I made during that thing, during that cloud. And that cloud could have been hours, it could have been days, there were times when it was months. But the It Gets Better, part of the It Gets Better is the knowing yourself well enough to know that a now absolute is almost never an absolute. It feels like that. Oh my gosh, I know how much it feels like that. Have I been suicidal? Yes. Do I still think about suicide? Yes. But I have a different attitude about it now. And I definitely know that I'm not going to make if crazy thoughts pop into my head in the moment, I just know because of the experience of going through these cycles, I don't know how many hundreds of times, that I can't reevaluate the universe based on the way it feels right now. And certainly I'm not going to do something like, you know, call up somebody that I love and tell them something terrible, or tattoo my face. You know, nothing that you can't undo. And suicide is one of those things. I'm actually of the belief that if you want to, kind of like with, I have no tattoos. But occasionally I will sketch an idea and go, this is genius, I want this forever. And I'll tell myself, okay, 6 months from now, look at this. And if you still want this forever, then all right, let's think about it. Then what I would do, the next step, is I would start drawing it on my body. And, you know, do I want to be seeing this every day? I've never got one. And I kind of see the same thing about suicide. I mean, if you are of the mind that I'm done, you know, I'm ready to check out, cool. Write a note, write a letter to people, talk to your doctor and your therapist and say, look, I'm kind of think I'm done with this life. I'm going to revisit this in 6 months and see if this is still something that makes sense to me. With depending on where you are in life, that 6 months could be, you know, longer, shorter, probably longer, because a tattoo is still a smaller thing than a suicide. Get the tattoo after 6 months. If you still want to commit suicide after, well, email me if you're in that boat, if you make it to 6 months, and we'll talk about it. Because what happened to me is that I eventually got to a point where I went on a trip, was in another country, and I forgot my meds. I forgot my quarter meds that I'd been on for 4 years, and I couldn't get off, because every time I tried, the world became shitty. And I'm like, oh my gosh, I don't have the meds. This is gonna suck. But, you know, all right, I'll make it through this weekend. And the way that the meds work for me is that it's not like I forget to take one and then I feel it right away. It's, you know, takes a day or two, maybe 3 days before I'm like, oh. And what happened was I felt fine. I accidentally stopped taking my meds and I felt great. And looking at what had been going on in my life the year and a half, the 2 years previous, I've really stepped up my personal spiritual practice, my personal gratitude practice, my personal self-happiness practice. And I really developed a lot of tools to break through the bad patterns, break through the bad thought patterns. I honestly believe that process of practice of gratitude, that practicing crap or cone, that practicing of recognizing these are my thoughts, this is not me, that all of those practices rewired my brain. Before that, it took chemicals to get me to bypass those dark spots. And now I rewired my brain so that I don't hit those. I mean, I still get down, I still go through funks, but it's not in the same, like, thrown in the back of a truck and driven cross country and dumped in a Mexican, you know, dump someplace. I never get that dark and out of control. I always feel like, okay, I know what's happening right now. So to me, that was incredibly encouraging. You know, like I'm going to a doctor tomorrow for my dislocated finger that never healed, right? Whee! And I have all these forms that I'm supposed to fill out about medications that I take. And I'll be honest, I do have a prescription for Ambien that I take on occasion when I really, you know, need a sleep or I've had too much coffee and then I can't go to sleep. So I'll take a half of an Ambien or something. So I write Ambien as needed and for 12 years of my life, I always had to write Cerazone, you know, and explain that I'm on anxiety medication and depression medication. And it's like, wow, that's awesome. So, yeah, I mean, I guess that's just, I wanted to just share my personal part of that. And, you know, as some people, because I have such a ability to share just what I want on the internet, as we all do, it sometimes might seem that, you know, I live in a candy cane land of lollipops and Swedish massage. And I still have not great experiences, but it, more importantly, in the past, I struggled a lot. And so as a 41-year-old man who loves life and has incredible relationships and just is in gratitude of the gift, I think it's important to say that I didn't skip through high school. I didn't skip through my young adulthood. I wasn't chipper all the way through at all. But there is a light at the end of the tunnel, especially if you practice. You know, I just reposted the list on the Hug Nation Facebook page of like my recommended reading. I have an Amazon list of books and lectures that have helped me. And so, you know, those are the ones that have helped me. But, you know, one thing, as I start to look into trying to shift my job from more social media stuff towards more speaking and coaching and things like that, I realize there's like a gazillion people that are creating all sorts of amazing tools and lectures and podcasts all about teaching your mind to think and be happier and more in gratitude. And it's just a matter of finding the voice that resonates with you. You know, there's incredibly dedicated, you know, religious leaders that might say it in the way that you need to hear it. There are all sorts of, you know, life coachy individuals. I did my first blog for the Daily Love, thedailylove.com. I did my first blog. I was asked to be a blogger for them, which is a huge honor because I've been a fan of Mastin, who runs it, and I just think it's a great service. And so if you, I see my name next to these like 100 plus other contributors, and there's all these incredible voices of positivity, of helping shift your mind. But my list of ones that have helped me dramatically are on that Amazon list, like Byron Katie is a huge one for me. And in fact, if you've ever emailed me saying I need help, I borrowed this from Jacob Glass, who he says, like, the first thing that he usually says to people is, well, have you been listening to Byron Katie? Because that, I mean, if you want to hire me as a coach, I'm happy to retell you the things that I've learned from her. But if you just want advice, well, just listen, watch some of her videos. She's incredible. She totally helped me change the way that I think, and thousands and thousands and thousands of other people. Probably more than, I don't know. I'm not good with numbers. A lot of zeros. Did I mention that today's topic was more of a ramble than it was a focused talk? Another thing that came to mind as I was watching Zefrank's powerful video was that he was saying it's important to be able to talk about pain, and that one of the reasons that people feel that they have no choices is because they're in pain and they don't feel like they have a support group to talk about it. And it occurred to me that I should probably clarify some of the just, you know, basic things that I talk about all the time, like crap or cone. You know, I don't mean for that to be a statement that you can't talk about what's hurting you, or that you need to, that it's, you know, that if you're struggling, and then that's something to be kept inside. Because I kind of think that there's these kind of degrees. You know, if you are in a place of a depression or a funk, or you're having suicidal thoughts, or you just, you know, you can't live in this place, that is baseline survival mode, and you need to do whatever you can to get to the next phase up. And so I know that if I was in that place and someone told me, hey man, focus on your cone, I probably, you know, while I'm in a depression, I would say what I mentioned earlier, like, screw you, I have all these reasons why life sucks. And so to tell me that I have no value in that, screw you. And then you'd say, but man, what about, you know, starving children in Africa? You've got it so much better than them. And then I'd be like, okay, so now I'm an asshole for not appreciating my shitty life. Anyway, my point is that in that dark place, just feeling heard and recognizing that what your experience is valid, absolutely, there's nothing wrong with talking about it and trying to make sense of the feelings you're having, and trying to find, especially people that are in that same vibration that are struggling as well. That's why we have support groups, where people that are like, I can't shake this vibration, you can't shake the vibration, at least I stop being critical of myself for having these feelings and these thoughts. I realize, oh, I'm not alone. In fact, you realize, oh my gosh, pretty much everybody struggles with something. But the challenge is, so many people have gone through this bottom chapter, we probably all have, is that then when we get out of that, partially because we then feel like we've bonded with people over this pain, is that it becomes comfortable. And it becomes how we identify ourselves. We are victims. We are survivors. We are angry at the world. We are, you know, righteous indignation about what's been done to us. We identify with the pain that we've experienced, the suffering, the indignities, whatever that is. And then it becomes our story. And we bond and we share and we we focus on our crap. And it becomes a cultural thing that we do as a way to connect with people sometimes. And when I'm saying crap or cone, it's to try to snap out of that phase, out of the base phase. You're now in this middle phase where your identity is now tied in with what you were, and trying to go, wait a minute. The culture loves you in this state, because somebody who's needing and lacking is very susceptible to messages saying, I can help you. Dun, dun, dun. In fact, I've got the perfect product that will fix all of your woes. I'll make you feel happier, more loved, more respected. But when we can start practicing and aware that, oh my gosh, I am focusing on things that don't serve me. There are good things that happen to me, and then I totally forget them. In a day of stuff, at the end of the day, if I don't practice, I will wake up the next morning thinking about my finger that doesn't work and all the other things that I'm frustrated about, unless I take a tally of the good stuff. And so crap or cone is like getting to that place of, wait, no. You've been trained to think this way. Start training yourself to think back over here. At least open to good and bad. And then start to go, wait a minute. How much does it serve me to focus on bad? There's actually tons of good. There's tons of good. And what happens is, and if you haven't experienced this, you have to trust me or have faith that as you start to focus on good, more good things happen. You are receptive to them. You're smiling and somebody wants to give you something. You are noticing the sun. And even if it is only that you notice more of the good stuff, it doesn't matter, because life is happier. And so I know that if you are in the base place, talk about, yay, sunshine, smiling, noticing all the good stuff, it sounds like you want to punch him in the face. And I get people to say that to me all the time. Grandpa got that all the time. People would be so like, it's crazy, the vitriol that he would inspire in some people just by whistling and kind of walking down the street. You know, they're like, okay. But as I can only speak for myself and people that I know and people that I read, that even as you cycle, even as you go, you know, it's not a path of better. In fact, my last week, quite frankly, has been a little bit of a challenge for me. Past couple weeks have been a little bit of a challenge. Last week especially. And it's been this moment right now of being able to explain all this actually makes me feel a lot better. I don't mean to anchor myself to my negative feelings. I'm acknowledging them and recognizing that these are feelings that I'm having. These are thoughts that I'm having. This is a focus that I'm struggling with. But there is so much good that's happening. What have I been focusing on? Things that weren't perfect. What have I not been focused on? Oh, I got to see my nephews and I got to play with them. I had a just delicious, long morning in bed with my lover that we just went, just barely woke up for hours. It was just, magical. And if I don't practice, those will slip away and I will just keep in my, oh, my back hurts. And the pain becomes my story. So, and then once the practices of noticing the good, then it's that gratitude practice, and then it's that kind of, it's tough to stay in this mindset, but it's that, wow, life is a gift, wow. I just got introduced to a website called liveinwonder.com, and the whole, it just kind of, I love the kind of splash of cold water I felt in the face as I listened to some of the videos on it, and which is like exactly what we're talking about here. That if you don't practice, you will, if you, you fall into the, one of the quotes said that, that the opposite of happiness isn't unhappiness, it's boredom. And that if we don't practice noticing, being excited by things that are, that are, that bring us joy, we fall into boredom, and then we start to notice things that make us unhappy. And it, and on personal, I've noticed, you know, that, that I, especially in this last week with all the clicking and the refreshing and the looking at stats, I find that I struggle. I can keep myself not bored if I just, you know, keep looking at Facebook and Twitter and whatever things online. And I, and I almost have a, even though I don't necessarily get bored, I have, I have, it takes a lot of effort for me to pull away from this, this feedback machine, this constant things to keep me occupied, to risk the boredom of the world or to find the wonder in the world. And I know that, that, you know, it, it just, that's the stage that I'm at in my practice right now, is of, is shifting that focus into the world, finding the wonder, taking the risks. Last night, I dropped off some flyers at, there's a guy who every Monday, Tim the Hamburger Guy, and he every Monday gives hamburgers to homeless people downtown San Diego. He's an amazing guy. He's been doing it for over 10 years. He's beloved. And he also, more than just hamburgers, he also has a filing card for everybody there. Everybody that comes in and that comes repeatedly. And so they'll say like, hey, you know, Tim, I need some shoes. And he'll be like, oh yeah, you know what? I haven't given you any shoes for over a year. Yeah, let's get you some shoes. What size are you? And then, but if they say, oh, Tim, I need a sleeping bag. He's like, I gave you a sleeping bag 2 months ago. That should last you a year. So I can't give you a sleeping bag yet. You know, and so he's got this massive relationship, this massive network, just coming from this, this, he's a really amazing guy. So anyways, I went down there last night. He had asked us to give him flyers for our event that's this weekend, the first Saturdays in San Diego. And I went down there. I was really nervous because there's a crowd of like 100 people waiting. And, you know, some of my insecurities and some of my old anxieties. And I just like kind of, I felt, but I went and I just sat down on the curb and a guy struck me up in a conversation. So I ended up talking with the guy for a while. And it was nice to connect and be there. And then when Tim showed up, I gave him the flyers and he said, you know, if you got to go, I can pass these out for you. And I was like, yeah, please. And I was like, I don't have to go. If I was in my strength, if I was in my highest self, I would have stayed and I would have taken this as an opportunity to love all these people. But I didn't. I was a little upset about myself. Yeah, it's not, you know, what's funny is that 10 years ago, dropping off flyers would have been a massive victory in terms of, you know, wow, this is the kind of person I want to be in the world. But now I'm at a point where just dropping off the flyers was made me feel like, ah, that's not who I want to be in the world. So I guess that's a good thing to see that on the trajectory. And it was also just good to remember. I called Jason, the other First Saturdays co-founder after, and I was like, kind of told him about, beat myself up. And he's like, oh yeah, you can't always be, you know, your highest self all the time. I sometimes get, you know, nervous when I go down there and you don't know what's going on. And it's like, okay. One of those reminders that it's one of these journeys. And as you practice, you have the memory that you've gone through this before, even when you're down. You have the awareness that this will happen again. And you just float a little bit more. I'm saying this to myself, of course. If anyone resonates with anybody else, I'm glad. But really, this is this week especially is the one, since I have been struggling, it's a chance for me to say the things that I need to say to myself. So wherever you are, grab yourself by the shoulders. Oh, Take a moment to love this perfect, flawed body of yours. How amazing it is, filled with miracles. And remember that everyone that you meet struggles. They might be chipper and cheer as you interact. They might seem like they got it all together, but everyone you meet struggles. They lose their temper. They cross their own lines. They have doubt. And so as we find our valleys and we struggle with our darkness, this does not make us farther away or separate from humanity. This is what defines us as humanity. And so as you see people frustrating you or in your way, know that they are dealing with their own struggles. And if we can forgive ourselves and allow ourselves and recognize that in ourselves we have these wild fluctuations, it gives us so much room to love everyone else in wherever they are in their fluctuations. So let's take three breaths together, separate from our ego stuff, separate from our fears and our doubts. Let's just take a few breaths from that deep down place where we are pure light, where our consciousness is freshly shining from source, unencumbered by the eye of our egos. Let's take three breaths. Inhale. On behalf of Grandpa Caleb and all the love warriors, happy Hug Nation. You are perfect, exactly as you are. And who you are becoming is the vision of the divine. It is a honor to share this planet with you. It is a gift to have this breath. And I so appreciate who you are and who you're becoming and who you allow me to be. I love you. Namaste.